From WIPR in Baltimore, I'm Tom Hall, and this is Choral Arts Classics. Tonight on Choral Arts Classics, a conversation about words and music. Unlike orchestral or instrumental music, the choral art weds musical expression to the literary arts. Some instrumental classical music comes with extra musical associations. The tone poem Don Juan by Richard Strauss, for example, is inspired by a poem, but the words of the actual poem are not sung or spoken. Choral music, on the other hand, almost always seeks to magnify or elucidate or enhance in some way our understanding of a particular poem or biblical passage by allowing us to hear the words set to music that it's meant to reflect what the words mean, or at least what the composer thinks they mean. And as we'll hear tonight, different composers, like different readers of poetry, have different ideas about what different poems mean. So tonight on the program, we'll listen to some spoken and some sung poetry, and we'll hear a few instances in which different composers wrote music for the same poem. Choral Arts examined this notion of how different musical settings affect our understanding of poetic texts in a concert that we gave last spring. We called it Poetry and Song, and we sang different musical settings of poems by writers like James Agee, Sarah Teasdale, Alfred Lord Tennyson, and others. Hello again, and thanks for joining us for Choral Arts Classics. I'm Tom Hall, the music director of the Baltimore Choral Arts Society and co-host of Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast here on 88.1 WIPR. Glad you could be with us tonight. Usually we meet on the last Tuesday night of the month, but because of the President's State of the Union speech last night, we're coming to you on Wednesday, as we've done for the past 11 years. On the last Tuesday night, usually from September through April, we get together and we listen to and talk about great choral and vocal music, and we sample recordings and live performances of the Baltimore Choral Arts Society and our special guests. And I appreciate your tuning in and joining us tonight on this unusual night for Choral Arts Classics. Now, in just a bit, we'll be joined by the poet Mary Jo Salter. She's an award-winning poet and scholar of poetry. She's also an accomplished lyricist who has collaborated on many songs with the great jazz artist Fred Hirsch. She'll give us a unique perspective on the relationship of words to music, and I look forward to that conversation. But first, let's hear a musical setting of a biblical text that has often inspired composers to write music for it. It's a setting of Psalm 100, and the appeal to composers is obvious in the first couple of lines of the psalm. It begins, "Make a joyful noise unto the Lord, all ye lands. Serve the Lord with gladness. Come before his presence with singing." Now, the Bible has, of course, long been a source of inspiration for composers. The very first melodies and polyphonic compositions that composers wrote back in the Middle Ages and into the early Renaissance were settings of beautiful biblical and liturgical texts. The first multi-voice setting of the Catholic Ordinary of the Mass, for example, dates from the 1300s. It was composed by a Flemish guy named Guillaume de Machaut. And as far as we know, he was the first guy to set all five parts of the Mass Ordinary to music, which means that he wrote music for each of the five sections of the Ordinary, the Kyrie, the Gloria, the Credo, the Sanctus, and the Agnus Dei. And the music for each of these sections is related by a common melody, so that there's a sense of cohesion and unity to the total composition. And because it's the Ordinary, these sections of the Mass could be sung at any Mass being celebrated on any day in the liturgical calendar. Now, in addition to the Ordinary, again, those are the prayers that are said at every Mass, there are what we call the propers, or those prayers and biblical texts that are prescribed for particular days in the liturgical calendar. That means, for example, that the propers on Christmas Day will be different than those for Easter Sunday or for the third Tuesday in July. Now, if you're a composer, you might want to set the prayers of the Ordinary instead of a text for one of the propers because of the simple fact that you'll get more mileage out of an Ordinary setting, which can be sung on any day of the year. So some composers, like Palestrina, for example, composed music for the Ordinary more than 100 times. But Palestrina also set many biblical verses to music as well that were used in the propers for a particular day. So Psalm 100 is one of those texts that's used in the propers, which means that this joyful, exuberant text, which is always set to joyful and exuberant music, wouldn't be proper, as it were, during Lent, for example, which is a time of somber reflection. Instead, this psalm is prescribed for the fourth Sunday after Easter in the Catholic and Episcopalian lectionary. And of course, the psalms play a central role in the Jewish liturgy, as do all of the psalms and all of the Hebrew scriptures. So we're going to hear two settings of this psalm, which has been set to music by hundreds of thousands of composers over the past 600 years or so. This first one is by the great 19th century synagogue composer Louis Lewandowski, who was a cantor and composer at a large synagogue in Berlin in the mid-1800s. This is his take on Psalm 100, which we'll sing in Hebrew, Hariu L'Adonai. It's set for mixed chorus and organ. John Walker accompanies the Choral Arts full chorus in this recording of a live performance. Music by Lewandowski, our first musical offering tonight on Choral Arts Classics. By the great synagogue composer Louis Lewandowski, his setting of Psalm 100, which the Choral Arts full chorus sang in Hebrew. The words mean, "Make a joyful noise unto the Lord, all ye lands." The joyful noise we made in this live performance was aided and abetted by the organist John Walker, who joined us last May for this poetry and song concert, which we presented at Grace United Methodist Church here in Baltimore. I'm Tom Hall, and I conducted the concert. You're listening to Choral Arts Classics here on 88.1 WYPR. So now we'll listen to another musical setting of the very same text, Psalm 100. This one's in English, and instead of a setting for chorus and organ like the one that we just heard by Lewandowski, this setting by the American Jewish composer Isidore Fried is scored for a cappella chorus. Again, the words are the same, but as you'll hear, the musical approach is somewhat different. Fried, who died in 1960, is writing music some 100 years after Lewandowski for an American audience. And while Lewandowski's setting had a brief fugal section, for example, Fried doesn't take that option, but rather he divides the music into fast and slow sections, with the first line forming a refrain that is repeated a few times. So here it is, Isidore Fried's setting of Psalm 100, featuring the full chorus of the Choral Arts Society on Choral Arts Classics.
Make a joyful noise to the Lord, all ye lands. Serve
Music by Isidore Freed, sung by the full chorus of the Baltimore Choral Arts Society. That was his setting of Psalm 100, Make a Joyful Noise Unto the Lord, All Ye Lands. A different musical rhetoric than the setting we heard earlier by Louis Lewandowski, but the two approaches do share a joyful exuberance, which is, of course, completely in keeping with the mood of that joyous text. I'm Tom Hall, the music director of the Baltimore Choral Arts Society. These live performances were part of a concert that we gave last spring that we called Poetry and Song. Now it's my great pleasure to welcome Mary Jo Salter, who is most definitely a person who knows a lot about both poems and songs. She's an internationally acclaimed poet who teaches at Johns Hopkins University, where she's the chair of the writing seminars. Her latest collection of poems, it's her seventh collection. It's called Nothing by Design. It's published by Alfred A. Knopf. And the Literary House Press at Washington College in Chestertown has also published a few of the poems from that collection in beautiful chapbooks that are called Lost Originals. So Mary Jo Salter, welcome to Choral Arts Classics.
Delighted to be here.
Good to see you. So I talked with Paul Muldoon last year, who's a good friend of yours, a poet, won the Pulitzer Prize in poetry, teaches up at Princeton, and he's in a rock band.
Yes.
And he writes lyrics for the rock band, for the songs that they write, and he writes poems. Mm-hmm. And I asked him, what's the difference between a poem and a lyric? And he had what I thought was a very interesting answer. He said poetry has its own music, and that lyrics need the music to sort of complete it. What do you think of that assessment?
I think that's really interesting because he and his band, Racket, are writing their own music to the lyrics that he's writing. And so he's in particularly good shape to understand what that music will be. For most of us who write lyrics, we're not Stephen Sondheim. We don't write the music and the lyrics. And so when I've written lyrics, I think I know how that's going to be completed, how that music is going to sound. But I've learned that I don't know, and that whatever music I think is there is going to be metered differently or in a different tone in some way.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to hear a couple of different examples of poems and lyrics. And you've got a couple, actually, one from your book, Nothing by Design, and another, a lyric called Dark Room, which are about, or Dark Rooms, do I have it right?
That's right.
That are both about war.
Right.
And it'd be fun to hear part or all of each of those and sort of compare them, and you can give us a little lit crit on it to show us how they work. So which one would you like to share with us first?
I think I'll start with the song, with the lyric.
All right, so this is a lyric called Dark Rooms. Now, this is a song that hasn't been set to music yet, right?
Right. Fred Hirsch, the jazz pianist and composer, and I have worked together on a song cycle called Rooms of Light, and it is all about photographs and photography. So this one we're adding late into a sequence that could have been considered complete. And Dark Rooms, therefore, should be seen as part of that whole scene. You'll understand the situation, I hope, from the beginning. Dark Rooms. My best friend came back from his tour of Iraq a different way than me. He was lifted off a plane in a flag-draped coffin the public couldn't see. They've got a law to ban all photos by the press, to soften all our pain, I guess. There's a dark room in my head where I don't want to go. Nobody wants to know. A dark room like the box he's buried in. He's dead. It could have been me instead. He was only 20, and he's not the only one. Believe me, there are plenty in the dark room in my head where I don't want to go, and nobody wants to know. He'll never get the chance to develop or grow in his dark room in the ground where no one wants to know. There's a governmental ban on the image of his coffin, but my buddy was a living man. Why should he be forgotten? There are dark rooms in the ground that no photograph will show, where soldiers lay their heads, and nobody wants to know. Never, ever to know.
So that's, again, a song that is going to be set to music.
Right.
And it's beautifully evocative. I'm not so sure I could separate that from a poem. I mean, that sounds like a beautiful poem to me when I hear it read by you.
Thank you. It was more like a poem when I first read it. After Fred saw my first draft, he said, you know, we're going to need to repeat a few more things than you've repeated. So that dark room in my head phrase is repeated more than I originally had it. In my original, I was a little less emphatic. The end of the song lyric now is, "And nobody wants to know, never ever to know." In a poem, that would probably be excessive.
Mm-hmm.
There's a way in which a song lyric, I think, is simpler. My best friend came back from his tour of Iraq. You just spell it out right away. And in other ways, where you're not sure you will be understood unless you repeat. And so that's part of the music of that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So let's hear a poem. The subject is the same, and the subject is war. This is World War I.
Yes.
That you write about the experience of soldiers in that horribly bloody conflict.
Well, this poem is called Our Friends, the Enemy. It's dated Christmas 1914, and as you know, that there was a truce on that day between otherwise enemy forces. And they sort of tiptoe across no man's land to give each other gifts, to dare not to be shot. So I'm just going to read a part of it because it's a long poem. Here are the soldiers, the English soldiers, walking across to the Germans. How did they dare walk across? They'd trod their way through worse before, lads underfoot in the muck. Now the day was cold enough, those poor contorted stiffs were coated in merciful rhyme. As for them, whose time hadn't come, you could say that squalor was the better part of valor. You could call it a sort of luck, not standing in standing slime in the trench, not fraternizing with the rats, but clambering over the parapets with a few of your rations in hand.
Yeah, so there's certainly less repetition
Yes.
in that. It is, and it definitely has a different rhythm, perhaps not as predictable as the rhythm of the lyric. Yeah.
This is almost free verse in the sense that the stanzas are not the same shape and the lines are not the same length. But there are a lot of what we call internal rhymes, which you can have in lyrics too, rhymes within a line. So fraternizing with the rats, you know, the word rat is inside the word fraternizing.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that in a lyric, but you can't do a lot of them because some of it will be lost.
Yeah. Let's listen to a tune that you did do with Fred Hirsch. This is a song called Light Years. And I note that on the jacket, it says poem by Mary Jo Salter. It doesn't say lyric by Mary Jo Salter.
I know. He seems to draw a distinction between poems that songs that rhyme and songs that only sometimes rhyme.
Yeah.
And
we'll hear that some of this is even recited.
That's right.
And part of it is sung and recited by a wonderful singer, Joe Laurie from Australia. So this is Light Years, words by Mary Jo Salter, our guest this evening, and music by Fred Hirsch here on Choral Arts Classics.
What did you think it was? The morning light that filtered through the gauze of the fluttering curtain in your first room on your first day of being alive. What did you figure when you held up your fingers and saw the sunbeam streaming in between them? Light years, light years. Sun, you saw somebody lying on the ground, another one of you. You looked at the dark thing you made. They said it was a shadow, a word you didn't know. What did you think it was? What did you think it was? Even when they taught you words for the glare that bounced off cars and blinded you in mirrors. The swirl of oily colors in a puddle in a park. The inside of a shell they called mother of pearl. A milky light that curled up like a child. Light years, light face in your own room on your first night together. The light that tries to tell you that he's real, that it's his arms around you, that he's not a candlelight reflected in his eyes that gives you back an image, though just a glimmer. What would you say it is in the neon lights that spell the night sky in Town Square? How can that be the same as the dim but somehow thrilling sense, the sense of something brightening out there in the woods at dawn? After staying up with someone, the bonfire of sunset, the beacon of a lighthouse, the flashing hand that ushers in the thunder, the gleam that slides off satin but catches in the folds, the chiaroscuro of a father's frown. The stars tossed in the ocean, the light that comes in waves and in particles. Light years, light years. The stars were dead that shone above the campfire, that flickered on the faces of your friends, singing songs whose words you still remember. So many galaxies of friends already gone. It takes so very think it was, this light, your life, a light that streamed between your fingers, that caressed those blessed faces, that floods the stage with memory and forgetting.
Music by Fred Hirsch with lyrics by my guest this evening, Mary Jo Salter. That was Light Years. It featured Joe Lowry on vocals. Fred Hirsch was at the piano and Richie Barshe on percussion. On 88.1, you're listening to Choral Arts Classics. I'm Tom Hall, joined in the studio this evening by Mary Jo Salter, terrific poet, and we're talking about the relationship between words and Music. That's a beautiful tune. And I think it's beautifully evocative when she speaks some of it and sings some of it. It's great.
Yes, I like the way Fred did that. That was not something I anticipated when we were starting. I knew that he might do something star-like in the beginning with that song. In other words, it sounds like twinkling. It sounds sort of like the universe out there with the piano. And then the spoken, what did you think it was, the morning light that filtered through the gauze of the fluttering curtain. But pretty soon, she's singing more, and it's almost as if Fred has, by changing it from speech to song, as if he's saying, okay, this baby is turning into an adult, and the experiences are fuller and better understood, so it's going to be expressed in song.
Yeah. What is your normal process when you work with Fred? How long have you collaborated together?
We've collaborated since 2005, mm-hmm. and the very first time was just when he wrote to say, do you know of a poem I could turn into a duet for a tenor and soprano? And I just wrote one and sent it to him. So we just started collaborating. But the process of deciding to write on the same theme in a series of songs on photography came to us over 2006 and 7, and we've just returned to it recently.
So you decided first on the subject, the general topic.
Yes.
And then you wrote words that he then took and sat at the piano with, or did he ever play you some tunes or motifs or excerpts of things? You know, it's the chicken and the egg. You know,
right,
did the tunes come first? The words come first? Did they grow organically together?
Well, we definitely came up with concepts together, and mostly in person, though he lives in New York. And at the time when I started, I was living in Massachusetts. So there were some on the phone, some by email. But once we had a concept, for example, I'm going to write a poem about a middle-aged woman looking at photos of herself on her grand tour of Europe when she's a college student. We come up with that idea. I write a first draft of a lyric, and he either hears it right away or doesn't and comes back and says, could you make it a little more like this? Then he writes a tune, plays it for me, and then he realizes that because of the melody he's written, some of the syllable counts in my words aren't going to be right.
So you have to change them.
Yeah, and he's very respectful about it. Do you mind if I add a that? Do you mind if I take out an it? That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And do you ever do the same thing with him? Do you supply him with musical suggestions? I would think that that's a tough thing to do with Fred Hirsch.
I do not do it. I know better.
And I think that's generally the case with all, you know, the great lyricists and composers throughout, you know, the millennia. I mean, Rodgers and Hammerstein or, you know, Lerner and Lowe. I mean, there was a person driving the ship there.
Yes, and Fred was so well known in the world of music before I ever joined him. I think maybe if we'd started off as kids together, it'd be one thing. Mm-hmm. But he's such a versatile composer that I'll hand him something and I hear it a certain way and he says, oh, you've written a tango, or oh, you've written a waltz. And I didn't know that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it doesn't hit your ear the way it hits his.
No.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder, just in general, does the meaning of words come out different? Do we encounter language in a different way when we hear it sung as opposed to when we hear it spoken or when we're reading it silently to ourselves? In those three ways of encountering the literary art and poetry or lyrics, do you think that there's a substantial difference in how we process the meaning of the text?
I do. I think that primarily the way we experience poetry today is on the page, even though there are lots of poetry readings, but this is mainly how we do it. And so we can actually see the lineup of a rhyme like art and heart, and we can say, oh, I wonder, you know, sort of what is there about the heart that's artful or whatever, and make some kind of connection. When we listen to lyrics, we may or may not be able to hear that. I might write in very short lines which rhyme, by the time Fred, the composer, has stretched it out, those disappear. And there's only one important, really important word that he's landing on, which is the end of his musical phrase, which is different than
the sentence. Musical phrase trumps the literary phrase.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, let's listen to some of Fred's music. This is a tune called Valentine. It's an instrumental piece. And then we'll listen to the version that Norma Winstone wrote lyrics. Here's Valentine by Fred Hirsch on Choral Arts Classics. Valentine by the pianist and composer Fred Hirsch. Now we're going to hear the same tune, but Mary Jo Salter, the title of the tune, now that it has words, is different. It's called A Wish, and then Fred even distinguishes it. He says the instrumental version is Valentine. So it's different because it's got words and a whole new title. Does that direct our listening in a different way, too?
I always think of it as Valentine, and I think that's partly just because that's how I heard it. But as your listeners listen to this, you'll hear that the four sections of the song all end with the word Valentine, and that's the way Winstone actually wrote it. I think sometimes they just give a different instrumental and song title for copyright reasons.
Yeah, could be just as sort of as simple as that.
Yeah.
All right, so this is, again, the singer Joe Lowry, joined by Fred Hirsch on piano from his album Fred Hirsch, the Fred Hirsch Pocket Orchestra. Also includes Richie Barchet on percussion and Ralph Alessi on trumpet. This is A Wish by Fred Hirsch. A Wish by Fred Hirsch. Joe Lowry was our vocalist. It's Fred Hirsch and the Pocket Orchestra. Lyrics by Norma Winstone. The same tune, Valentine, put with words put to it by Norma Winstone. That's beautiful, Mary Jo. I love that tune.
I think it's one of the best he ever wrote. Haunting.
Yeah, great. Let's ask you to read a poem from your new book, Nothing by Design. You got one that you like especially? If I were to have to pick one that I liked especially, it would be impossible because I like virtually every poem in this book.
Oh,
it's
thank you so much.
Book.
I think I'll read, because we've been talking about music, I think I'll read a short poem called Pair of Bells. Joanna and Valerio went up to the campanile of the stone-deaf castle. From across the courtyard, one dented little bell with a skew clapper could be seen. I hadn't noticed the bell pulls, but when Joanna yanked on hers and Valerio took his turn, I heard a pair of louder bells, deeper, surely bigger, though these and both my friends remained entirely invisible. And the little bell, off key and out of sync, hung on and swung. A third wheel, like myself, moved to celebrate a pair of bells. Things happen but are parables.
Things happen but are parables. It's beautiful. From Nothing by Design, Mary Jo Salter reading from her latest book. Now, I'm not a poet, I'm not a literary critic, I'm not a scholar like you, but when I hear that read, that could almost, in a way, be an essay. You know, the sentences could flow one to the other.
Mm-hmm.
It sets up the scene beautifully. It, you know, you place us in that place very succinctly and completely. But on the page, it's divided into stanzas of three lines each. So how a poem looks seems to me to be a pretty important parameter of what your kind of artist does.
And, you know, very often writers really don't know what they're doing. I wrote this poem, and I had no idea until maybe a year later that when I wrote, Joanna and Valerio went up to the campanile of the stone-deaf castle, that I was thinking of Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water. And so nursery rhymes are in there, and, you know, I thought it was an experience I'd actually had in Italy, but that's why it's in threes, because Jack fell down and broke his crown, and Jill came tumbling after, comes after that. But the first sentence is in threes. Jack and Jill went up, et cetera. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I don't get it.
And it's just as simple as that.
It really is.
It's a nursery rhyme.
It sort of seeped
into your DNA a long time ago.
Absolutely. They're either in three or four line stanzas. And I wanted to make it very simple also because this is two people, two bells, a third person wondering why she's not part of it. End of story.
Yeah.
And so there are three people, and that's the other reason to have three lines per stanza.
And, of course, the other great thing about poetry is that it reduces everything to the bare essentials.
Yeah.
You know, there's no fluff. There's no extraneous stuff. There's no and it's not like there's a sense of urgency or hurry. If anything, there's a sense of great leisure and great, you know, the capacity to just sort of sit and consider, but you bear down into the essential words, the essential syllables.
You know, it's interesting too that you can have an idea. For example, you experience something, like you watch people pulling some bells, but long before I had that experience, I remember thinking one day I would like to rhyme pair of bells with parables. And it was just in my notebook, and I waited for years, and then one day I see somebody pulling a pair of bells, and I think, ah, this is a little parable about that. So that's the other thing.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
the
some of it is willed,
stuff that
and
happens.
Some of it
yeah.
is just
yeah.
random.
Let me ask you to read a poem by Sarah Teasdale. It's called There Will Be Rest, and then we're going to hear the Choral Arts Chorus sing a musical version. We're actually going to listen to a couple of different musical versions
mm-hmm.
and sort of, you know, think about how the different musical settings affect our understanding of the text. But here's the text, There Will Be Rest by Sarah Teasdale.
There will be rest and sure stars shining over the rooftops crowned with snow, a rain of rest, serene forgetting, the music of stillness, holy and low. I will make this world of my devising out of a dream in my lonely mind. I shall find the crystal of peace above me, stars I shall find.
So here's our first example of a musical setting of this poem by Sarah Teasdale, There Will Be Rest. This is composed by Frank Tichelli. He's a composer from California. The Choral Arts Full Chorus sings this beautiful setting of this beautiful poem here on Choral Arts Classics.
I'm sure stars shining
Music by Frank DeKelly on a poem by Sarah Teasdale, performed by the Choral Arts Full Chorus in a live performance. And here's now another setting of that very same poem. This one is scored for chorus, piano, and flute. It's by the eminent choral conductor, arranger, and composer Dale Warlin from Minneapolis. The Dale Warlin Singers was his terrific professional ensemble. They were a particularly great champion of contemporary American choral music. They commissioned and premiered many, many new works. Here's a new work by Dale himself. It features, along with the Choral Arts Full Chorus, Leo Wanen check on piano and Kristen Winter Jones on flute. Music by Dale Warlin here on Choral Arts Classics.
Thank you.
Music by Dale Warland here on Choral Arts Classics. That was his lovely setting of a poem by Sarah Teasdale called There Will Be Rest, performed before a live audience in May of last year. I'm Tom Hall. I conducted the Choral Arts Full Chorus along with pianist Leo Wanacek and the flute player Kristen Winter-Jones. We called that concert Poetry and Song, and next month on Choral Arts Classics, we'll continue our exploration of the relationship between poems and songs, and we'll hear some other music from that concert. And once again, it will be our pleasure to have Mary Jo Salter along for the ride. So, Mary Jo, here's a funny thing about that poem, There Will Be Rest. Dale's piece was commissioned for a wedding, and Frank's piece, the same poem, commissioned for a funeral.
Oh, that is fascinating.
You know, and it's the same poem.
I think I'd prefer to have it for my funeral.
Yeah. It does strike me as sadder than happier, but it was written in memory of a little boy, a three-year-old boy who drowned in a pool in an accident, who was the son of a friend of ours, a guy named Carl St. Clair, who's a wonderful conductor in Costa Mesa, California.
Oh.
That's Frank Tichelli's setting, and then Dale set it for the wedding of two guys in Minneapolis.
Well, you know, but you know, poems are so much about beginnings and endings.
Yeah.
I can just see why that would make sense.
Well, we are at the end of our time with you this evening, but I'm delighted that you're going to come back next month and we'll continue this conversation. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Mary Jo Salter, her latest book is a wonderful collection of poems called Nothing by Design. It's published by Alfred A. Knopf. And that'll do it for us this evening. To hear the Choral Arts Chorus live, mark your calendar for Sunday, March 9th. We'll be at the Towson United Methodist Church, just off Delaney Valley Road, singing a wide-ranging program called From Madrigals to Musicals. And yep, you guessed it, we'll sing everything from some madrigals from the 16th century all the way through some great tunes by the American Musical Theater team of Rodgers and Hammerstein. The soprano Janice Chandler Eteme will join us. She'll sing some opera arias as well as some spirituals, and we'll even hear her in the beautiful Pie Jesu from the Andrew Lloyd Webber Requiem. I know that that's a favorite piece of a lot of folks, and I hope you can join us March 9th for that concert. It'll be a lot of fun. For information about tickets, please visit the Choral Arts website at baltimorechoralarts.org or call us at 410-523-7070. And also, when you visit baltimorechoralarts.org, you can order Choral Arts CDs, including Christmas in America's First Cathedral and a recording with the jazz legend Dave Brubeck. Again, for information about any of our concerts, please come to baltimorechoralarts.org or give us a call, 410-523-7070. You can hear Choral Arts Classics on the radio or on demand. Go to WYPR.org and catch up on shows you may have missed or shows you'd like to hear again. The producer of Choral Arts Classics is Aaron Henkin. Don't forget to tune into The Signal Friday night and Saturday afternoon, produced by Aaron Henkin and Lisa Morgan, along with Andy Beanstock. And please join me, Sheila Cast, and Nathan Sterner for Maryland Morning tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, right after Morning Edition. I'm Tom Hall for WYPR and the Baltimore Choral Arts Society. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great night. We'll see you back here next month on Choral Arts Classics.